Welcome to the Currency.News podcast. It pays to be curious.
Hello, you're listening to a special edition of the Currency podcast. I'm Ian Keogh. Now, as you know, over the last number of weeks and in the weeks ahead, our Rugby World Cup coverage has been supported and sponsored by Interpath Advisory. And today we're doing a special podcast on the Rugby World Cup and the business of sport. And I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Robert Brophy, who's the former CFO of World Rugby and is currently the lead advisor for sports, media and leisure with Interpath Advisory, and also by Rob Kearney, who, as we all know, is a former professional rugby player with Leinster, Ireland and the British and Irish Lions. Gentlemen, delighted to have you here.
Thanks for having us here.
We're going to talk about lots of things. We're going to talk about the Rugby World Cup tournament so far, the opportunities and the growth for rugby and the Rugby World Cup, how we can explore new markets, the future of rugby, sponsorship and all of these things. But Rob Kearney, I want to begin by you. Ireland plays Scotland this weekend. We had a brilliant fixture versus South Africa. I'm not a rugby expert. I watch it like pretty much everybody else and I read about it, so I'm going to have to bow to your expertise on it. But a fantastic match against South Africa where the number one team in the world went up against the world champions and we came out on top. Just your thoughts on that and also your thoughts going forward to the Scotland match.
Yeah, I think on that South African game, it was an incredible occasion. I think it was a match that was worthy of a World Cup final in terms of the quality of rugby that was played, the pressures within the game, the standard of rugby. And Ireland were unbelievable in that game. I think they played really good stuff, but they will also know that there is more in them as a team. And I think South Africa would probably finish up that game feeling a little bit hurt, knowing that you could argue that they threw it away in some parts of it. Well, they missed the kicks and some of their decision making was a little bit poor. They dropped a few balls over the line, but I think they are still probably the people's favourite in terms of winning this competition again. But for Ireland, the trend continues to grow. They're improving week on week. They look like a team who are very happy. They're improving every week. And they also know there's a massive challenge ahead this weekend in Scotland. Scotland, a team who will not fear Ireland in any way. They will feel that they have exactly what it takes to beat us on their day. And I think if we're being honest, if Ireland are a little bit off and Scotland play their very best rugby, they could beat us. So it's a hugely exciting weekend. But for Ireland, they know that every game now is a World Cup final for
them. And Ian, just to come in on that, off the pitch, I thought, you know, the occasion was a remarkable one with the camaraderie from the supporters, you know, the excitement within the stadium and also the sportsmanship from the players when they came off the field to play. I thought that was remarkable. And, you know, putting on the global hat reflected the values of rugby, which, you know, we'll talk about a bit later on in terms of the appeal from a business perspective. But that stood out to me as well as the great play on the field.
And I want to come to that on a sponsorship point, but just Rob, I just want to ask you, like, you're going out, you've been in those matches, be it for Ireland, Leinster, the British and Irish Lions. What's going on in your head when you're out there? Are you factoring in what the supporters are like, or are you completely zen-like and just dealing with, in your own position, catching the ball, running, or...
You're far from zen-like, Ian. You're far from zen-like. The World Cup brings enormous amount of stresses and pressures with it. Not like a Six Nations, not like playing provincial rugby. So there is that heightened sense of nerves. You know, when you walk out for the anthems, the whole build-up for the week, you can tell that it's bigger. And I think that's why they have conducted themselves in a really strong way, that they have shown so far in the competition that the pressure hasn't gotten to them. And can they keep doing that week on week is going to be the real ask.
Do you think we can?
I absolutely think we can. We are number one team in the world for a reason. We have beaten all of the other top teams in the world on our given day. We do need some luck along the way. And if we are to do it, we're going to have to probably take one of the hardest routes ever to winning a World Cup. But this team absolutely has the capability to do it.
Robert, I just want to come to you because you're coming, I don't know if you're coming with a conflicted hat or not, because on one hand, you're Irish, you played with Blackrock, you played underage representative level with Leinster. Your uncle played with the Lions. So you're coming from an Irish hat, but at the same time you're looking at it having spent 26 years at a very senior level with World Rugby. You were interim CEO, you were the CFO, you helped build the World Cup. When you look at this thing, are you looking at it through an Irish prism, or are you looking at it when you see the match and you're going, nothing went wrong there, we didn't, there was no big issues in the stands? When you're looking at these matches, how are you taking it?
Thanks, Ian. It's definitely a bit of both. I think when I was fully engaged by World Rugby, I couldn't speak in terms of my favouritism for Ireland, but I certainly can now. So I'm looking at that game with a passionate Irish pair of eyes, but I'm also looking at the event. I'm looking at, you know, the excitement. I'm looking at all of the tournament, actually, in that context, and I'm seeing outstanding crowds. I'm seeing camaraderie. I'm seeing spectators sitting beside each other from opposing teams, and I'm seeing a lot of positives. And I think, you know, we'll talk a little bit about the future of rugby. Is rugby the next big sport that might, you know, globalise? Possibly yes, possibly not, but this tournament will certainly stand in a positive way in that regard.
You mentioned lots of things you've seen. If you were, you know, and I know you only left World Rugby earlier this year, if you were still in that job, would you be seeing numbers? Because, you know, when you're looking at that, it's a sponsor's dream.
Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, you can't wear a CFO hat and not be conscious of the numbers. And they're certainly, you know, I'm well aware of how this tournament will deliver. It's likely to gross over 700 million euros in revenues. Just for interest, that compares to a miserly 4 million euros back in 1987. This is the 10th edition of the World Cup. You know, on anybody's measure, that's incredible growth, I feel. But, you know, that all of that funding will be reinvested back into the game and in various ways. There's some exciting initiatives in the women's game and also in the men's game with the Nations Championship at two levels. And, you know, there's been a lot of commentary, rightly, about the need for investment in what we call the emerging nations, are also referred to as Tier 2, and that will kick off in 2026 with some significant further investment.
I think
in that space.
You're entirely right about, you know, and it's a point that's probably not laboured enough, I don't think, in terms of the revenues generated from this World Cup, that all that money goes back into developing the game for the next 4 years. And I suppose it shows how important each World Cup actually is to Rugby World Cup, that if on a given time that tournament doesn't go particularly well, it can have some damnations for the future of the game over the next 4 year cycle. So it's imperative every time that Rugby World Cup goes really, really well for the future of the game.
But just to develop that point, Ian, you know, I mentioned gross revenue 700 million. For the business listeners, it's about 150 million of a surplus. All of that gets reinvested. I think if rugby is going to take the next step forward and get into the major markets, and US is certainly a huge opportunity and target for World Rugby, with a Rugby World Cup scheduled to take place there in 2031 men's and 2033 for women's. But rugby will need external capital to make that happen.
And I do want to come back to that.
We will come back to
that. I do want to come back, but I just want to talk, because we've mentioned a couple of really interesting topics. And I just want to move it beyond whether we win the match at the weekend or whether we can win the World Cup, because, you know, it's speculation. Mm-hmm. And I just want to talk about money and opportunities and the growth potential of the game, because I think a lot of people are interested in that. Rob, I'll just come to you on this, because, you know, we've seen, obviously, you know, we know the Tier 1 nations and how they play, but I think some of the big growth that's come over the last 5, 10, 15 years, and Robert's been instrumental in it, has been the growth of the female game and the sevens version. How do you view the growth of that, and how can we develop it further?
I view it as extremely important to future-proof the overall growth of rugby. The sevens game has been transcended in recent years. I think it's a different product. Fans like it because it's quicker, it's more exciting, there's more tries scored, and less injuries sometimes. The women's game has improved enormously too over the last number of years. Their last World Cup was record attendances, and it is adding to the overall value proposition that rugby has. So it's hugely important. Yes, the men's 15 game is going to be the cornerstone of the offering, but there is enormous strides still to be made for sevens and women's.
Would you have liked to play at sevens? a bit more. I'm not talking about going into the Kinsale sevens or whatever, but the rest of it. Which
no, I wouldn't have had the pace, to be honest, for you. So to play sevens, you need to be rapid. And in my youth, I was quick, but I wasn't rapid. So I think it was probably more suited to the 15s. But listen, I prefer the 15s game.
But Robert Brophy, just to bring you back in on that, because if you look at it, like sevens offers an opportunity to go into areas where rugby isn't a traditional heartland. And the same with women, you can bring it in, you know, beyond the core tier one teams.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, I'd like to note that Ireland are actually semi-finalists in a World Cup. They made the semi-final of the World Cup most recently in South Africa, the sevens team. And look at the progress Ireland has made in sevens, both men's and women's, over the last number of years. I think that's to be highlighted. You know, recently Kenya beat South Africa in a decider to qualify for the Olympic Games next year in Paris, which is a big highlight. And it's easier to make significant progress in the sevens game than it is, I think, in the 15s game. World Rugby's invested heavily in men's 15s. For example, the Fijian Drua, who are a local side in Fiji, participating in Super Rugby. But there are great opportunities within the sevens game, including places like China, who have shown immense interest. And once your sport becomes an Olympic sport, the major countries have to invest in that sport. So I would be optimistic about the future of sevens in that context.
I'm going to bring you in there. Was it tough to get rugby into the sevens and into the Olympics, the sevens?
It was. Actually, rugby was in the Olympics in 1924 and was expelled from the Olympics due to a scuffle that took place, ironically, in Paris in 1924. So we're coming around to 100 years, if you like, anniversary of. But it was difficult to get back in. But I go back to my comment earlier about the values of the sport. I think we leant heavily in World Rugby on the values of the sport in demonstrating why Rugby Sevens should come back in. And I think it's been a great success since it was readmitted in Rio in 2016.
Yeah.
And I think it's got an upward trajectory from there.
I mean, the other part, Rob, is going into new geographies and new territories, you know, and to expand rugby beyond. So I'll give the example. We know people like to watch cricket, but there's maybe 8 teams who play cricket. There's 8-9 teams who have dominated rugby, and it's to drive it beyond that. I'm interested in your views. You've gone to a World Cup in Japan. You're involved, not playing, but you know, in a different role with rugby in the United States. Just wondering how rugby can take that step to branch itself into new territories.
Yeah, I think what we witnessed with the 2019 World Cup in Japan was phenomenal. It really was. World Rugby had the foresight to award Japan a World Cup, but also heavily invest in rugby in that country for the 7 to 10 year period before that. The Japanese took to the game very well. They realized that they could put a very strong team together, one that actually beat us in the pool stages that year, which was probably the biggest upset of the whole tournament. But more importantly, the Japanese people massively got behind it and they were selling out stadiums across the country. And it was an enormous, enormous success for World Rugby. And I think after that tournament, and I'm sure Robert will come in after this, they looked at that and said, OK, well, that was an enormous success for us. Where is the next market that we can go out and attack? And it was the United States. And I would think that they're looking to roll out the exact same strategy that they did in Japan with America for that next World Cup.
Absolutely, Rob. You're absolutely right. And I think the only shame was that COVID arrived shortly after the 2019 World Cup and Japan didn't get the chance to really benefit from that phenomenal tournament, you know. And I think Japan haven't got enough credit for staging that tournament pretty much from scratch. They'd never staged any major rugby event prior to that. But World Rugby, I can certainly say, has enormous ambition. That's why USA have been nominated for hosting in 2031. And between now and then, it is intended to have significant investment in the sport in the US. I have no doubt that a Rugby World Cup, men's and women's, would be highly successful in the United States. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the sport will continue to be successful thereafter. And a lot of groundwork is going on right now to make it happen, both the tournament and also the business end, I suppose, and the opportunity.
The United States market, it's really interesting because it's obviously a massive market. And if you can get all the people who don't play American football after they finish school, essentially, you know, to get into other sports. But we've seen from soccer, the struggles to get in there and the amount of money continually that they've had to put in.
It's undoubtedly, it's the big prize. It's the big prize. You know, you've lots of capital, I think it's fair to say, invested in sport in the US in various different guises. And rugby is starting to see some of that happen as well in that part of the world and elsewhere. But it's also in the big challenge. You know, you could invest very heavily in the United States and achieve very little. And I think, you know, football is a very good example. It's taken them a long, long time, a long time after the FIFA World Cup was held there in 1994, for it to now be successful. And it's a combination, I think, of a number of factors before you can say a sport has been truly successful in the US. So it's a massive challenge, but a great opportunity.
Rob, what brought you into involvement in rugby in the US?
Yeah, there's a few different things. Firstly, I think there is enormous opportunity for rugby in the US. Like we spoke about, it's the last market that the game has attracted there. If you crack sports in America, financially, it's going to be an enormous payoff. I think Americans haven't had a huge amount of exposure to rugby, but when they do watch the game, they love it. They absolutely love it, because all of a sudden you've got this gladiatorial sport where people don't have padding and headgear, and they just find it fascinating.
And it doesn't go on for 3 hours.
It's quicker game. True. And the biggest thing that I think American football is going to become under increasing pressure over time is head injuries and concussion. And it's making a lot of noise in the background American football has in their country. And I think it's going to rear its head very soon. And I also think that World Rugby and the rugby fraternity have made enormous strides in terms of head injuries and concussions in our own sport over the last number of years. Yes, there is still a huge amount of work to do on it, but it is the single biggest challenge to rugby at the moment. And I think everyone who support rugby, kids who play in rugby, have a role and a responsibility to ensure that we remain really vigilant of that challenge.
And sorry, Ian, just to come in on that, you know, I have no hesitation, and it might sound strange to say, I'm extremely proud of the enormous prioritisation that World Rugby has given to head injury. I think it's a challenging area for any contact sport. The changes that have been made, I think we've seen significant behavioural change. And just going back to South Africa, Ireland, you know, not one single TMO reference, not one single yellow card or red card, you know, and the behaviour, given the gladiatorial.
That's it. I was pretty sore watching the match now.
Was incredible, but yet nothing like anything near a head injury. So I'm not saying in any way the problem solved, but World Rugby's making strides in the right direction. And you know,
but you take that match.
That continues.
You take that match, Robert. That's something you can sell. That's something when you're going out into the, and you've done this for 25, 26 years, go out and sell this. That's something you can sell.
Absolutely. I think,
but sponsors.
Why do sponsors jump in? You know, the viewing figures for rugby are significant and good. And I know the viewing figures in Ireland have been very strong, and Rob's played a major part in that. But the opportunity is around the values of the sport as well. What does rugby represent? And, you know, discipline, integrity, respect, all these values are really important and embedded within the sport, and including respect for the referee as well. I think all of those factors, and certainly in market research that we would have carried out, they would be very important factors. And maybe I'll just highlight one partner, and that's MasterCard. They embraced Rugby World Cup men's, but more recently are embracing Rugby World Cup women's as well. And they see that as being equally important in their business world. And I think that's going to be reflected in future sponsorships going forward as well. But they would certainly comment to us that the values of the sport are what attracts them.
Well, that's an interesting one. It's a US-led company. It's an area that wouldn't necessarily, you know, you wouldn't think about it automatically when you're MasterCard, but obviously something within there. And they're not the only people to get in behind rugby.
Yeah, they unfortunately missed out on the dual sponsorship of men's and women's in Soccer World Cup, and they were determined not to miss out on the men's and women's World Cup. But I think that particular mindset change is reflected across a wide number of sponsors and not just MasterCard. And, you know, it bodes well for the women's game. The next Women's World Cup will be in England in 2025, by far and away the biggest rugby market for the sport, but also I think the biggest sports market, maybe excluding US, I think, for women's sport in general. So I think that will give a serious amount of impetus to the women's game.
Yeah, I think it's really an important point. And, you know, I don't want to sit here and say, you know, rugby is amazing and it's no challenges and it's the greatest sport on earth, because it does have its challenges. But to go back to that point on the values of the game, they are very, very strong. And when you take kids who... And ultimately, you'd be surprised, it's mothers in the household who make the decision whether their kids play the rugby, and they have some toss-ups to make in their own head. You know, are they going to get injured? Is my child going to get hurt? But ultimately, it comes back to the values of the game. And parents think that my kids are going to get really good exposure to respect, to teamwork, the importance of dealing with setbacks, resilience, all of these little things that are really important for young kids growing up to learn when they're developing in life, and team sports gives them that.
Now, Robert was talking about sponsorship, and I appreciate the point about values, but when you were a professional rugby player, and you're not long out of it, I mean, how much of your time did you have to engage on a sponsorship, not on a personal level, but for your club or country? Is it something that factors in, or do you go in with a more single-minded, it's about the game, it's about...
No, I suppose there's a few different things to unpack there. As a player contracted to both your club and country, you have to do appearances for their sponsors. And these will be scheduled throughout the year. A lot of times they'll be done on down weeks when you're not preparing for a game at the weekend. And that's just part and parcel of your job. It's in your contract. You have to make yourself available for some of the team sponsors. From a personal perspective then too, players do have the ability to generate their own off-field earnings and their own off-field revenues from partnering with some brands who it can be mutually beneficial. And it comes back to Robert's earlier point about a lot of brands want that association with rugby because they think it's a really good place for them to align themselves with.
Yeah. Well, we've seen, you're talking about brands wanting to come in. We've also seen private equity wanting to come into the sport. It's been a big change over the last couple of years with CVC coming in. And we've also seen, you know, private equity take a stake in the All Blacks, which if you'd said 20 years ago would have been unthinkable.
Yeah, you're right, Ian. And certainly when I joined World Rugby, the concept of any dilution of equity would have been, you know, I think rubbish very quickly. I think it just shows you how the professional sport has evolved over time. And I feel that the involvement of private equity has a major part to play both now and in the future. You know, CVC, as you've said, have invested heavily in Six Nations, in the URC, and also in Premiership Rugby. I think it's too early to tell if that investment has been successful yet. But I suppose, go back to the team analogy, I think private equity or private investment or sovereign wealth fund or debt capital has a role to play and is actually part of that overall team. You know, I think when the Irish rugby team goes on the field on Saturday, they'll know their job. I think private equity, hopefully, know their role as well and can play a significant contributing factor in advancing the sport. I mentioned earlier that rugby has great opportunity to grow, but it will need capital. You know, all of the, certainly from a World Rugby point of view, all of the capital that's generated from this World Cup is pretty much committed, and therefore some element of external will be required. And that possibly involves a lead advisor, and that might be Interpath, it might be somebody else, to come forward with guidance in that space as to how that might be best utilised. But certainly there's a big opportunity out there, and I think rugby will benefit from that private investment.
When you look at it, Rob, I mean, you've transitioned from rugby into business and finance. So you're looking at, what's your take on kind of the changing dynamic of the financial structures of rugby?
Yeah, I think it's needed. It's like any business, if you're trying to scale it up massively and reach new markets, well, then investment is needed. I think it's important, if I put my player's hat on now, that that welfare remains at the top of that agenda, that, okay, here's X amount of investment. That doesn't necessarily have to translate to more games being played on the pitch. Players still need their rest, they still need their recovery, and they still need their time off during the year. If there is a huge amount of investment and capital, yes, it has to go into the growth of the game, but it has to trickle down all the way to the players too. That it's a fair solution for everybody.
Yeah, Robert, you've moved. You've moved from World Rugby, as you said, you're into Interpath. You're advising CFOs now in leisure, media and sport. I mean, when you're looking at it from the new hat on, what's your take?
Yeah, we've touched on it earlier, Ian, in terms of sport being evolving, I think, quite significantly over the last 10 or 15 years. And we've seen enormous change in just about every sport. I think football, rugby, golf has seen major investment. What does that mean? It means a lot of things. It means there's a lot more money circling. But it also means that money needs to be managed, I think, efficiently and effectively. I think there's only so much capital that an organisation such as CVC will invest in a sport without seeing some element of return. And I think that's creating, I suppose, a role for the non-exec director or the independent advisor, you know, and I think Interpath can play that role in particular to facilitate that investment in an efficient manner. We've talked about the US and Rob's spoken about the, you know, the opportunity that's out there. It's also significantly challenging. And whoever's investing in the US, I think, needs to have a detailed business plan to make that happen and make that happen over a significant period of time.
Yeah, you know, going back to the US market now, I think if you are a super high net worth businessman in America, the ultimate badge of honor for you as a person is to own a sports team. You know, we've seen it time and time again. And the entry level for rugby in America now is at a point where it's pretty available to a lot of Americans. You know, if you look at the soccer model there at MLS now, you know, you could argue that Miami or LA Galaxy are valued close to $2 billion, yeah. You know, and the entry point to them 10 years ago was maybe 100 million.
Yeah.
So the people are seeing this as an enormous opportunity, yes, to get into sport, but also to make an awful lot of money from it.
And I just add to that, rugby needs new markets. It's not like it will continue to be satisfied, if you like, with the existing major markets, which are France, England, Ireland, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, really. And they provide, I think, 75% of the total broadcast revenue for this event and for the Women's World Cup as well. So it's not a case of should we go. I think rugby and world rugby and the rest of the world of rugby needs to go into new markets. And that's US, that's Japan, hopefully China, hopefully India and other major markets outside of that, because that's the opportunity, and that's what globalization really means. I think we like to think it's a global game. It's not a global game as yet. It's a significant game, well represented by this particular World Cup in particular, I think. But it has lots of opportunity and lots of challenge out there as well. Okay.
Final question to you both. I'm going full circle here back to where we started. Can we win this thing?
We absolutely can. We're going to need a lot of luck. We are going to play some really good teams, really, really good teams over the course of hopefully next 5-6 weeks. There are 3 or 4 guys within our team who we absolutely need to remain fit. And we don't have any more weeks off like we do this one. So we absolutely can. We need a lot of luck, but we can dare to dream.
Rob's better place to comment on the field.
Well, actually, can we host a World Cup? There's a question I'll ask you.
100% Ireland can host an outstanding World Cup. And I've no doubt that if Ireland were hosting this World Cup, we would do an outstanding job. However, I've got to say, I think France is an outstanding country to host a World Cup as well. And I'll be diplomatic when I say that. But Ireland can both win a World Cup and can host a World Cup. Rather than comment on the field of play piece, I look at the team that Andy Farrell has assembled around him. And I'm looking at the camp. And I know it's easy to say this when you're winning, but I do like the mood in the camp. And, you know, to maybe relate it back to the Ryder Cup that took place over the weekend, you know, Luke Donald seemed to assemble a great team around him as well. So I think Ireland, and I think the RFU have given the team every possible chance of success. And I think we all wish them well.
Well, look, thank you, Robert Brophy and Rob Kearney. Thank you very much for joining me on this special episode of the Currency Podcast. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ian. Good to be here.
You've been listening to the Currency.news podcast. It pays to be curious.